welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency romance review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
Well, Kelsey, we were just talking before we hit record about what a few weeks this has been for both of us.
Yeah, the month of February has not gone as planned in any shape or form, I think, for either one of us. But, you know, life.
My kids have been sick for like a month, which anyone with little kids, I'm sure you can commiserate. And I got sick with my kids being sick, and I threw out my neck twice. And so like everything's just been extra hard for like a month now. But I feel like I'm finally sort of almost on the other side of that. Personally, I mean, my neck is still pretty bad, but my kids are not currently sick. And so And then there's all your stuff.
Yeah. So I went into February with a job, lost my job within the first week of February.
No.
Yeah. Boo. But then that ended up being okay because then my mom and stepdad, who were supposed to host my uncle and his girlfriend while they were here, got COVID. So then they could not host them. So then
are they okay?
They're fine.
Okay.
And they got it early enough that they were like, well, you might not have to have them the whole time. Like, we'll be testing, you know, like my mom was already doing better before they even like came, but she was still testing positive. And then my stepdad started testing positive. So, So like it just kind of went around. So basically I have a guest room. So I was like, they're welcome to stay here. So it was good. I didn't have a job because I got to play hostess and tour guide and I had a really great time with them, but it definitely threw everything out of whack. However, I did manage to find a job in the meantime.
Yay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Well, that is exciting. Tell me and our listeners what you can about it. I'm excited to learn.
Well, so it's a contract position, so it's short term, which is great.
Cool.
Because life and other decisions, and again, as everyone knows, I've made big strides to like change career paths. And so I figured why not take the time that to instead of hunker down into a job for my next who knows long, commit to a few months of learning something new.
That's awesome. I'm excited for you. You had told me about like the quick, oh my gosh, I don't have a job anymore thing. And that was frustrating for you and for me to say, well, for me as your friend, I don't mean like personally, but like for me as your friend. And then I'm very excited today to hear that you have a new job and we can talk more about it off the air.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think we should hop, skip, and jump right into the book that we're talking about today. I'm excited to get to our discussion. We have not discussed anything about this book yet. So this is going to be a fresh discussion between the two of us. But this book was not our choice. This book was a patron choice. So again, we want to thank patron Sindhu for her for this book recommendation. She is a member of our aristocracy and all of our $10 a month aristocrat patrons get to choose a book for the podcast. And so we are doing Sindhu's book today, and that is Scoundrel of My Heart by Lorraine Heath.
Yes. So one, I wasn't sure if we've actually done Lorraine Heath on this podcast before.
We have. We've done one Lorraine Heath. It was the Viscount who – no, the – it's a Viscount book. It's a Halloween – we did it for Halloween our first year.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's – there's a ghost in it. Anyhow, it's going to make me crazy until I can remember it. But
– oh, was it a Hellions of Halstead Hall book?
Yes, I believe. Or it's like another Hellions, maybe not Halstead Hall, but we had this
discussion
before.
It was a Hellions
before.
Situation. Hellions. There's a few Hellions situations. Okay. Well, that's fine because I thought we had done one of her books, so I did not put our general author fact for an author that we may have talked about but have not yet covered. But today, for our history fact, I'm actually just going to read the author's note because she kind of just gave me the fact perfectly that I would have done more research on. So I'm just going to read her note to readers.
Perfect. And it was our 10th episode, The Hellions of Havisham, number 3,
there
The Viscount and the Vixen. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So in the early part of the 19th centuries until at least the 1850s, cock and hen clubs existed throughout the less affluent sections of London, providing a place for unattached men and women to meet, pair up, go off somewhere, and spend an intimate evening together. A singles club, as it were. Eventually, they began to fade away, the sexual aspect turning more towards the socializing bent, where people simply enjoyed music and other entertainments. While it is unlikely that Grift would have found one to visit in his wild youth, literary license is a wonderful thing, and it's possible the rare one might still have been around to serve as inspiration for his club.
So I thought that was a great author's note to include because specifically as I was reading this book, I thought that the premise for his club was a little outlandish, you know, and I thought that it was really great to know that it wasn't just completely creative license. Like there was something, there was a historical thing in it, and that just made it I don't know, it just made it more interesting for me, too, that there was a historical inspiration for this idea of a club. And yes, she had creative license. And yes, this book is a work of fiction. And everything that we know, quote unquote, about the Regency is fiction. And that's fine. But I think like my reaction to this club that the main character opens was a little bit of like I don't know if I am buying into this. As a reader, like I don't know if it's.
I think it seemed a little outside. I think it just seemed a little outside our understanding of the Regency in that sense.
Well,
because it wasn't a gambling hell.
Like we understand my real opinions for later, because I think if I expand upon my opinions here, it's going to go into too much discussion, and we haven't even got to talking about the book yet. So, we've got some tropes. Our main tropes today are friends to lovers, the guy falls first, class difference, and an inheritance.
Yes, and our main characters are Mr. Griffith Stanwyck, previously Lord Griffith Stanwyck. Apologies, Zoe, if it says Griffin somewhere in the notes, because I definitely was writing Griffin, and then I reread it, and I was like, that's definitely not his name.
Yeah, well, because they call him Griff for most of the book, and yeah. I was like, is it Griffin or Griffith? And finally, like, three-quarters of the way through the book, someone said Griffith again, and I was like, oh, okay, it's Griffith.
Yeah, no, I had to, like, I was, like, going through that, and I was like, Kelsey, you totally just messed this up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's Griffith Stanwyck, also known as Griff, and Lady Catherine Lambert.
And from Sindhu, our patron, we ask our patrons a few questions about, you know, the books that they've selected. And the first question we have for them is, do you have any thoughts you'd like to share about the book before we read it? And these are Sindhu's thoughts. She says, this book is definitely in my top three books that I have read this year of any genre so far. And I believe this was last year for her that she submitted this. So, Scoundrel of My Heart is the first book in the Once Upon a Dukedom trilogy. The hero, Lord Griffith Stanwyck, and his brother Marcus, who is the hero in the final book of this trilogy, are briefly introduced in Heath's previous series, Sins for All Seasons. This book is exquisitely romantic with a perfect balance of sweet and sexy. And although Sindhu wrote this, and although I have read all the Sins for All Seasons book, I 100% did not remember, did not get the connection until they finally stopped calling Althea Thea, and they mentioned her husband. I was like, wait a minute, the true loves? Like, it was so crazy that, like, I'm, like, halfway through the book before I realized that. And then I was like, wait a minute, yes, I do remember Marcus. I do remember Griffith very, very vaguely, which, of course, made them more interesting to me because I have this, like, I have history with them that I didn't remember. And, you know, you have already some level of investment in those people. So that was just silly of me for not making that connection when it was literally written to me so nicely here.
It didn't take me that long to put that together. I had this book on my Kindle. I've actually read this one before. It's just been a while. I think I read it when it first came out.
Okay.
So I've had this one and I had read it. And I was reading it and they mentioned the true loves and I was like, wait a second. I feel like there's a storyline I'm missing here. I feel like, and then I was like, wait a second. And then it became clear. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, click, 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 click.
Yes.
Well, I was like, I don't remember his sister getting with the Earl.
It's, you got to read all the books. We're not talking about the true loves today, though. We're talking about the Stanwicks. And Kelsey, shall we get into our synopsis?
We shall. Griffith Stanwyck has been teasing his sister's best friend, Lady Catherine Lambert, since they met when she was 12 and he 15. The two have always been known for bickering and teasing each other ruthlessly. Lady Catherine has always said she would marry a title. This is due to the fact that her grandmother wanted to safeguard Catherine's future, so gifted her a cottage in Kent with the stipulation that she marry a title by her 25th birthday. Catherine, now almost 24, is faced with finding a man with a title and marrying very soon.
Griffith is the spare heir of the Duke of Wolford. He is known for going out and carousing because, frankly, his father has paid him little attention his entire life. However, Griffith feels called to do more and is actually working towards opening a club, the Fair Ladies and Spare Gentlemen's Club. This would be a place where anyone who is not a lord can meet up, chat, find companionship, or in a spinster's case, have a safe place to explore what could ruin them. At this time, the Duke of Kingsland, who we also talked about in our 2023 books, because that is part of the Chessmen series, King and Bishop and Knight. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm smiling, it made me really excited for those books that are also that are coming out. And I was like, I need those now.
I'm not like after reading about the Duke of Kingsland here in this book, I was like, Of course, I need to read
his book. I reread his book, actually.
Oh, yeah?
After reading this one, I definitely switched and read the second book, which is Kingsland book. So then I was, like, really excited for the Chessmen series that's coming out.
I know. Okay. Anyhow. Okay. At this time, the Duke of Kingsland has put an advert in the paper asking women to write in if they want to be considered for his duchess. Catherine, who is facing a deadline, plans to write to the Duke and asks Griffith to covertly see what the Duke is looking for in a wife.
Griffith does indeed find this information out, and he also agrees to continue to help her in her quest for the Duke's hand. But she must agree to waltz with him at the Duke's ball, and when Griffith relays the information, he asks if she might be interested in meeting him at midnight for an adventure.
Before that, though, Catherine, Griffith, and his sister take a ride in Hyde Park where they meet the Duke. Catherine, who learned that the Duke wants a quiet wife, is anything but. However, the Duke is intrigued and says he'll be on the lookout for her letter. That night, Catherine takes a risk to meet Griffith at midnight. Something about him always makes her want to act a little recklessly. He shows her the building and tells her of his desire to create the Fair and Spare Club. She is very impressed.
In fact, Catherine is becoming much more interested in Griff than Kingsland. The evening is safe, though, and nothing interesting happens while they're touring the building. At the Duke's ball 2 weeks later, Griff claims his waltz, and Catherine is wrestling with her attraction, knowing that she loses her inheritance if she were to marry a second son like Griff. That being said, the Duke is there to announce that he has chosen her out of all the ladies who wrote in and intends to court her. He immediately comes and claims her for a waltz. Quote, "She had to admit he was a fine dancer, every step graceful and perfect, as though he would tolerate no less from his person, would not allow any aspect of himself to be found lacking. What would he not tolerate in a wife? How would he react if she failed to meet his expectations? May I be honest, Your Grace? I should hope there would always be honesty between us. I'm rather stunned you selected me. And why is that, pray tell? Because I never sent you a letter."
Oh, Catherine didn't, but Griff did. After the Duke and Catherine dance, she tries to get away from the crowd outside. Griffith follows her, and when asking what she's doing, she quotes the letter he wrote to the Duke. Griff stands by what he wrote and cannot help but steal a kiss. Quote, "This kiss wasn't the first mistake he'd ever made in his life, but it was the one that would leave in its wake the deepest regret. It would have been better to have never known the taste of her, light as champagne, rich and sweet, and the swiftness with which she melted against him fit so perfectly as though their bodies had been designed with each other in mind."
Then Griff leaves her standing in the garden. The next morning, Catherine learns that Griff placed a wager on Kingsland picking her over all others. She's pissed and assumes that is the reason he wrote the letter to the Duke in the first place. She goes to confront him and then finds out that he, his father, and brother have all been arrested for treason. Dun, dun, dun!
Such a shocking twist and turn, because now we're 10 months later. And this is where the plot of Beast's book in the True Love series has taken place. Griffith's father was hanged, and his family was ruined. The crown stripped the titles, land, and money from them. His mother died shortly after, and the siblings are left destitute. His brother Marcus is determined to find out who else was involved in the treasonous plot.
Griffith was helping his brother for a while after his sister married Benedict Truelove, also known as Beast. But that was not the life for him. Pulling money together, he has been able to purchase the building he always wanted for the fair and spare, but needs to collect the money from the Kingsland wager to outfit the building. Apparently, after they were arrested for treason, no one felt like they needed to actually pay him for the loss of the wager.
And Catherine hasn't seen Griff since their kiss the night of the ball. She is also not yet engaged to the Duke. She hears Griff's resurface to collect on wages from the bet he placed, and she has an idea what he may need the money for. Quote, how he longed for peace. Maybe it was the reason Marcus was obsessed with discovering the truth of their father, because without it, for him, peace could not exist. But Griff was learning that the truth didn't bring peace. It only brought misery, because the truth was, and he and had been for longer than he'd realized, he loved Catherine, loved her with a strength of conviction and passion that was terrifying. It had prompted him to write to the Duke in order to ensure she gained what she desired. The wager had been an afterthought to provide him with consolation. If he couldn't have her, he'd have his damned club, but the laughter within its walls had not been hers.
6 weeks later, Catherine hears of a new club, the Fair and Spare. She marches her way over to the club and confronts Griff. After an airing of grievances, she kisses him, then demands a membership and leaves.
The two meet again at the club, but there is no kiss. They simply talk and Griff shows her the club while they both relish being in each other's company. That is, until Griff is called away by his brother, who sends him a life or death note. Catherine insists on giving him a ride, which turns into her being used by toughs who are trying to kill Marcus. Griff saves the day but is injured. She finds out when she kisses him in the carriage and feels a wet spot on his side.
Catherine takes him to her cottage in Kent, where he is stitched up and allowed to recover. They talk the next day, and Griffith just wants to get away from the temptation that is Catherine. A storm rolls in, keeping them there for an additional night. That night, Griff is awoken by Catherine having a nightmare about the battle by the Thames. He wakes her, and they have an encounter where he brings her to orgasm with his tongue and hands. Griff leaves before she wakes up and takes a horse back to London. If he were to stay, he would not be able to stop himself from having all of her. Quote, the indulged second son he'd once been would have done it, would have put his own pleasures and wants and needs ahead of hers, but he no longer was that man. He'd had his sense of privilege slowly ground out of him through toil and labor and deprivation. He'd come to appreciate what he'd had only when he'd no longer had it. To take her would have meant seeing her deprived of what she yearned to possess, and where she was concerned, he refused to be that selfish.
A week later, they are both at a dinner with Althea and the Truelovs. While at dinner, Griffith tells the Duke of Kingsland about the deadline of Catherine's 25th birthday and asks him why he has not yet asked for her hand. The Duke ignores the question but thanks him for the information.
Catherine confronts Griff outside about leaving after their encounter at the cottage, but Griff tells her it had to be that way. She needs to marry the Duke. On the ride home, that same Duke tells her he'll speak to her father so she can get her inheritance. Catherine is now starting to think that it would almost be nice to not have the cottage hanging over her head. Also, Griff really needs to stop pushing her at the damn Duke.
So she decides to take something for herself before her imminent proposal. Catherine finds Griff after his club closes for the night. She tells him there to play a cards, a variation of strip poker. They do, and then of course we have encounter two, which is full consummation. However, afterward, Catherine says she could still tell the Duke no. Griff tells her this isn't love, it's a fantasy, and then watches her leave while his heart is torn in two.
The Duke proposes to Catherine, quote, don't take offense, but I kneel for no one. She thought of Griff, who had gone to both knees without hesitation when it might have meant death. She turns down the Duke.
She also tells him that she hopes one day he'll find someone who he'll fall to his knees for.
Bum, bum, bum.
That night, the Duke tries to get into the Fair and Spare. He's not allowed, but Griff meets with him and learns of the failed proposal and that she never sent a letter. The Duke tells him he took the gamble and took so long to propose because he was waiting for her to look at him like she looked at Griffith that day in Hyde Park. Catherine, for her part, went away to her cottage, since it won't be hers for much longer. She's determined to enjoy her time there and wish it farewell. She's hoping maybe once she turns 25 and is free from this gift that has become a burden, she can convince Griff to have her.
She does not wait long. Griff arrives at the cottage, confronting her on the seashore. They confess love. She asks him to marry her. He says yes, and also tells her that her terrible cousin is gifting her the cottage for her birthday. Turns out her cousin had a secret that Griffith was able to bargain for the cottage with. They marry. On the day of the wedding, the Duke's secretary gives her a note from the Duke. It's the letter Griffith sent to convince the Duke to name Catherine his intended.
And then we have an epilogue. Years later, at their cottage by the sea, Griffith sees his wife and three girls and knows that he is the happiest of men and that life could not be better. Oh, so cute. Oh my God. Them playing with their three little girls is so cute. I'm as a girl mom, I have two girls. I'm just like, oh my God, the
okay. Oh, I know. And he's just like gazing upon them, like watching them run around. And he's like, yep. My yeah. people.
So sweet. All right. Well, I can't wait to talk more. So shall we adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
So today in the parlor, we want to just quickly remind you that we have a Patreon and we've got a goal and we're really close to it. I think we need one or two more patrons to hit our first goal, which is going to be a special patron only episode reward for that. But our Patreon is patreon.com/TNNancyStrumpets. And we've got tiers from $3 to $10, like our patron Sindhu, who's recommended this book for today's episode. There are all sorts of amazing perks, and we do hope you'll check it out.
And if you'd like to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at T's and Tom N as in Nancy Strumpets, Facebook/T's and Tom N as in Nancy Strumpets, and YouTube also /T's and Tom N as in Nancy Strumpets, or by searching our name.
And if you're listening on YouTube, now's a great time to click that thumbs up and hit subscribe before you forget. And liking and commenting on our videos and subscribing to our channel is a really wonderful way to let us know you like what we're doing. All right, Kelsey. So first in the Once Upon a Dukedom series, but connected to a series we both know and love.
Yes.
Tell me your general thoughts about this book.
Well, I thought it did not go as I thought it was going to go. At first, because I was like, again, I was reading it and I had like things in my brain where I was like, wait a second, don't I know Griff? I'm very confused. I feel like things happened. And then I was like all along, and then it was like, boom, treason 10 months later. I was like, oh, okay. Like, good to know. Like, because I also remembered the Kingsland, like the whole Kingsland letters for a bride. And I was like, you know, I did remember that one because I remember Kingsland's book very well. I really liked his book, which is a separate
I have
separate
not
aside.
Read it, and I really want to read it.
You should totally read it. Very okay. good. Highly recommend. but yeah, so I kind of liked it definitely like took me on some twists and turns. Mm-hmm. I definitely thought that it was definitely like so much of Griff acting like out of his love for Catherine, but not even realizing it. But then she was like mm-hmm. oblivious to it. And mm-hmm. Zoe's like, So tell me what you thought.
Well, before I tell you my thoughts, I forgot that I wanted to mention what our patron wanted us to discuss. So one of the other questions that we ask our patrons is, do you have any questions or discussion points you'd like us to touch on in our discussion about this book? And Sindhu said, I imagine it can be difficult to sell a story where the hero is a second son rather than an heir to a title. However, this seemingly unattractive premise works well in this book. I think it's because the hero demonstrates his strength of character through persistent resilience and grit in the devastating aftermath of a treasonous plot, while others may have either chosen not to or did not have the fortitude to drag their way out of the debris of scandal. What are our thoughts? So I think we should touch upon that, you know, just the theme. I mean, I completely agree agree with her. I think that the premise of the second son and the, you know, the conflict of Catherine's inheritance that she loved so much, kind of needing that. And the I think that that was the misunderstanding that worked the most for me. Well, let me say what I mean. But I think that this premise really was a great was well executed. Mm-hmm. I think that that part of it was really good. I really liked that. And I think that the conflict between her needing an heir and him for her inheritance that she loves and cherishes, and then him being a second son was great, because that misunderstanding made the most sense between the two of them, because he always heard her say for years she was going to marry a titled gentleman. So even though he was attracted to her, he was like, well, she's always going to overlook me because all she wants is a title.
Yes.
But did not know that it was because of this inheritance.
Yes, so he finds that out later, which is, I think, great. Because again, you were talking about misunderstandings. And again, I feel like there was – it wasn't quite misunderstandings. Again, it was like you didn't have the full picture. Mm-hmm. Because even when he got the full picture, he was like, well, I get why she can't have me now. Because yeah. I don't want to – especially once he had everything taken away from him. He's like, I cannot – have that taken away from her.
Yeah.
Because it's important to her. It means the world to her. And like, I don't want her to resent me later because she missed out on that, which is again, like,
we can argue that, but we anyway. Can understand where he's coming from.
Yes.
Okay. So what did I think about this book? I'm going to be honest. This book did not work for me. I agree. I think this book has some really interesting plot points and some really interesting things that I like about it and that it did. I actually really liked that all of a sudden there was this 10 months later. I liked that you get this carefree, you know, hero in the beginning who has to like change into someone else. How believable was that for me? I think the execution fell a little flat on that.
I think that in some ways you almost need when you another read book. This, because you get introduced to Griff in a different book.
Yeah.
And so I feel like when you read that one, you actually see a little bit more of Griff because he's really struggling with it. Like you see him kind of like, you see him in that turmoil of like,
yeah.
just post this. He's going to the docks. He's trying to take care. He's trying to help with Althea, but he really doesn't know what he's doing. And his brother's off doing mysterious things.
Yeah.
And then she gets taken care of by Beast. And like, then he's like, great, I'm going to go help Marcus because I feel like that's what I need to do. And so this book, especially when you get to the 10 months later, is he's finally doing something for himself, which is what mm-hmm. he initially wanted to do. But again, once he was putting his family first. So I feel like there was a bit more development if you actually had
recently read that. Yeah. And I hadn't. I didn't remember it, obviously, until I was well into this book. So I think the big sticking point for me was something that you sort of already touched on, which is that Griff and Catherine kind of kept having these like micro misunderstandings where they would not hear or hear what the other person was actually saying or admit what they were actually feeling. And so there yes. was always this like layer of misunderstandings of in some respect between the two of them. And then they would like be quick to anger with each other and not hear what the other person was saying. And this went on almost the whole book, right?
Like, I think that I get what you're saying, and I think that I was irritated in some of it myself when I was reading it, but it was more just – for me, I didn't feel like it was a misunderstanding necessarily between the characters. I didn't actually feel that way. What I thought was it was just these idiot characters not understanding their own freaking feelings.
Well, they're not admitting the truth to themselves either.
Well, that's it, and that's it. That's what I mean. That's the thing that I was annoyed with for a lot of it, because it yeah. was like – because it wasn't like she finally walks away from him and he actually finally shows the anguish of losing her, like for the first time ever, even to himself.
But you know? Yeah, like, and it's like, but you
even
had,
after he had,
it just irritated me that yeah. it because here's the thing, they kept having these repetitive things within their relationship and repetitive reactions where they again like refused to admit things to themselves or to each other.
Yeah.
And what frustrated me about that is, and I really thought deep and hard about like why isn't that rewarding to me? Mm-hmm. And it's because if you think about it in terms of like a real life relationship or even just in a book, like with a book, you know, you want to see them have a conflict that they have to overcome that will make them stronger. And yes. if they consistently do not overcome, do you trust that the next time they have one that comes their way that they will overcome?
Yeah, or, this is very much a one step forward, two steps back kind of situation that they always find themselves in.
Well, like, yeah.
They make a little progress and then they both retreat. And then they make a little progress and then they both retreat.
And so then it was like, well, so then the next time something difficult comes along in their lives, are they really going to, like, I didn't trust that they were really going to be able to make it together. Like, I thought they were going to have a lot of conflict. And so I think that that is why I really don't find these types of plots as rewarding. I think also, like, both of the characters, we both use the word annoying. Like, I felt annoyed with them because they were not being truthful to themselves. They were, like, literally being – it felt – I shouldn't say literally being – it felt like they were being – like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, belligerently, not
yeah. Like, believing she was, in them, she held themselves. On to the idea of the cottage until literally, like, the Duke proposed to her, and then she was finally like, "Man, I really wish I didn't have this stupid cottage." It's like, yeah, because you're holding on to it, and like,
yeah,
because. Yeah, and she's holding on to it because of, like, and even she's talking about, like, in the book earlier, she talks about how she wished her family weren't so obsessed with, like, status. Like, she understands her grandmother put the stipulation because she was worried she would marry someone who basically would just, like, take her inheritance and, like, take all the money and spend it all and leave her, you know, struggling because yeah. they didn't have any income. But at the same time, too, like, she even talks about it. She's like, that's not a guarantee with a lord either. Like, and she could have also, but then it was also her grandma putting status in her. She's like, because I also could have then married, like, a lawyer or something, you know, like a businessman who could make his own money and wouldn't need mine. But no, that wasn't allowed either.
Yeah. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. I felt like there were a lot of, you know, good concepts in this book, but the execution fell flat.
That's fair.
Or maybe it just didn't quite jive with me because of the themes that it, you know, relied upon. But yeah. I will say, I really want to read Marcus's book. I got to know what that dude's up to. And
I read the Duke's book and then I read the beginning of Marcus's book. And then I was like, I don't remember liking the premise of this book. So I actually stopped reading it. Didn't even reread it. I've read it before. But I was like, oh yeah, that's who he's matched with. Eh. I was like, I know there's some more going on with this, but I'm like, eh, not interested. The Duke's book was great, though. I will say, though, even with the annoying things, the biggest saving grace with this book was, one, I liked, as we'd mentioned, like, the premise of the book was a little bit more interesting than we normally get. And two, I think that the other thing about it, I realized, like, I just love Lorraine Heath's writing. Like, I mean, for me, I just really enjoyed her writing. And I think that was really what made me want to read the book more and, like, finish it and then move on to the next one because I just love her writing.
That's – okay, this is really interesting because I felt the exact opposite in this book.
Really?
I really felt dragged down by the writing. I felt like it was very – I don't know. The word rote comes into my head, but I'm like, does that actually mean what I think it means? Yes, mechanical or habitual repetition of something to be learned. Like, I felt like it just felt like I need to write this book. And it did not flow for me. It did not make me want to keep turning the pages.
Really? So one of my favorite quotes is literally, like, the second line in the book. Because it was just, like, good. It felt like good descriptive writing and I really loved it. Like, so one of the quotes I put in is literally, like, the second line in the book.
About three quarters of the way through the book, I realized I had highlighted nothing and that I needed to highlight something as a favorite quote in this book. And I better figure out something that I thought was okay. It's just really interesting because,
yeah.
And also,
well, I know really, you were like, ugh, about it. And then you got to the 10 months later, she's like, okay, never mind. I'll stick with it.
Yeah. I also have one major, like, weird thing that I have to bring up. Okay. There's this thing. So when Griff takes her to his club, he lures her on an adventure. Like, he's like, you should come on a nighttime, midnight adventure with me. And then brings her to this I just have to read it, okay? Mm-hmm. There was a large brick building that took up a good portion of the block. First of all, he just picks her up in the carriage, She has no idea where they're going. He doesn't tell her. There was a large brick building that took up a good portion of the block. There was no light shown from within, and it appeared forbidden was a bit ominous, and Catherine's heart pounded a little harder, but she trusted Griff not to place her in harm's way. Uh-uh. Girl, you do not get in a carriage with a man that you do not actually know and go to a foreign place and just decide you are going to trust him. Like, and you're just going to go into this random-ass building. Like, what the actual... Like, this is... Okay, here's the next part. But when he indicated she should go in... She wasn't about to admit cowardice to him, so she stepped over the threshold and watched spellbound as the light from the lantern danced eerily through the cavernous entryway, revealing an open doorway on either side and wide stairs that swept up in an elaborate curve, befitting any grand residence. Girl, this is how you get raped. Like, I was just like, you do not go. And you do not, you do show cowardice. You say, fuck politeness, and you show cowardice. It's not cowardice. It's smarts to be like, I'm not going to this abandoned building with you in the middle of the night. You are my best friend's older brother, who I know is a scoundrel. Like, I just literally was like, my people who know this will know, but my murderino senses were absolutely tingling. And I was just like, girl, you do not. You fuck politeness and you get out of there. I cannot believe she went into that building with him. And then I also can't believe that they didn't have an encounter. So anyhow.
You were just expecting him to be like Rakey McRake-Rake and he wasn't. But that was something. So for me.
And I did not actually expect Lorraine Heath to write that he was going to do that. But the way that she wrote them going into that, and I was just like, I just felt like Catherine was being such an idiot, like absolutely such an idiot. She was like, I don't want to show him cowardice. I'm like, no, girl, this is the moment where I want to see the heroine stand up and be like, excuse me, sir, tell me what this bullshit is about, because I'm not just going to go into some empty building with you where nobody knows that I am. Like that is what I took away from it. And I wanted to see the heroine stand up a little bit more.
That's fair. I don't know about you, but I think a lot of the books I've been reading lately, the heroine would say something sooner. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't just be like talking to themselves internally. They would totally be like, the F are you taking me?
Yeah.
Like, I agreed to this, but I did not agree to a weird, creepy building. Mm-hmm. I also was interested to see what happened because I couldn't remember, but I also didn't like, I also knew that like more was happening later. So mm-hmm. anyway, but I also just finds it really interesting that like, when he gets injured, she like hies him off to Kent. And I'm like, he's injured. He's bleeding. He passes out. And you hie him off to Kent? Because you're like, that seems like a faster choice to get help.
Yeah, I don't know. There were some dubious choices in this book. But let's break it down a little bit to our hero and heroine. What did you think about Griff in general?
I thought Griff was... He was a character... Okay. I'm trying to think of the words here because the thing that bothered me was he was one of those characters that was trying to do the right thing by doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Like all the time.
That's a fair assessment.
Like he's trying to do things for her because he cares about her. Even before he even admits to himself like how deeply he cares for her, he's doing these things. He's like, I don't even know why I'm doing it. It's like because you like her, dum-dum. But,
yeah.
You know, but he's doing it and then to keep pushing her, like he finds out about the inheritance and then he's like really shoves her at the Duke, like really hardcore shoves them together. Mm-hmm. And then when she's like, I didn't necessarily want this, you know, like I like you, and he's like, no, you don't, you like him.
Yeah. I don't know, I thought he was interesting. Like he had a lot of dimension. I think like what Loretta, oh, sorry, not Loretta. This is Lorraine. What Lorraine Heath tried to do with him with his transformation is really interesting. I liked that. He is the same character before and after. Like,
yes.
His heart is the same. But, you know, he's just had more experience. And I think all of that is really interesting. Okay. But yeah, everything just kind of fell flat. And a lot of the time, like everything felt a little melodramatic and just it just didn't hit for me even with him. And, you know, he frustrated me with kind of these like micro misconceptions consistently. And mm-hmm. yeah, so although, you know, I think for me, he's a 5, I would take him or leave him.
I'll give him a 7. I also liked the book more than you, so I'm going to rate this higher. Like,
yeah.
7 because I do believe he had some good dimension. I think that I kind of liked where he ended up. He was always kind of the same person, but his life experiences made him go for things a little bit differently. He didn't do it in the same manner. So that I liked. But Catherine, on the other hand, we can talk about, because Catherine, I think I liked her more in the second half of the book than I did the beginning half. And actually, even like the last quarter of the book, when she finally started figuring herself out. She was kind of just a bit willing to go with the flow and go along with it. Like, didn't even question, like, why does Griff irritate me? Why do I seem to be drawn to him? Like, oh, we had a really great kiss. Like, what was that about? You know, but she also didn't seem to, I don't know. I thought it was really obvious in their interaction. Granted, I'm a reader. I can hear both their thoughts. Mm-hmm. She does not have both their thoughts. But I thought it was very clear with Griff's actions that, like, he really liked her, but did not think that he was the one for her based on what he knew about her inheritance and all of that. And I thought it was very clear in all his actions, and she was always mad at him. And I was like, why does that not make sense to you?
Yeah, the ball was always in her court, and she just kind of didn't know she had it. And, like, she had a lot of power and opportunity. Like, I wish that we had seen them come together earlier and solve a great problem together versus have these problems and finally get together when they sort of could get rid of some of the problems.
Well, you know, when they, like, realized that the problems were not really problems.
Yeah. So I definitely felt like I generally found her to be just lackluster. And I always, kind of what I already explained, like, I always wanted her to do more, say more, stand up more. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, a kind of a person who's a little more introverted or someone who maybe holds their words until the right moment, I think characters like that are also really worthwhile and wonderful, and I love reading them. But I didn't feel – I just felt like she wasn't that, you know? It wasn't that she was more reserved or quieter, or she, you know, kind of waits until the right moment for something. She just kind of missed her shot so many times. And I felt like she just could have been more. She didn't quite do it for me. So I'll just be honest, and I would leave her. I think I'd rate her a 4.5.
Yeah, for me, I'll give her a 6.5 again. Mm-hmm.
Just
everything
fine.
I've already said, but, like, she's fine. She gets a 0.5 because she got better at the end. Mm-hmm. Like, she did grow, and I did appreciate that. But I liked him more than I liked her, for sure. So,
yeah. So next we get to talk about our, I can't even remember what's next. Steaminess rating and encounter counter.
No, we go quotes.
Quotes. Okay.
Quotes.
Favorite quotes. Okay, you've got a couple, so I think you should tell me the quotes first, and then I'll tell you my one quote.
Okay, one's like a dialogue quote, and the other one's just a descriptive quote. Again, my first descriptive quote was, like, first page, first paragraph, like, done. Loved it. So it says, "The raspy voice, like fine sandpaper massaged over velvet, a bit of roughness against tantalizing softness, forced Lord Griffith Stanwyck to come awake with a jolt of pure physical want that nearly made him groan as his cock responded with a need that would go unsatisfied that morning." It's just a good descriptive line. I was like, dang, that's a lot of words.
It is. Do you want to read your second one, or do you want me to read mine now?
Sure, I'll read the second one. I think this is Griff just talking about what he'd want in a partner, or maybe somebody else talking about what she wants in a partner. I don't know. I don't remember the context of this line, but I just liked it. "Of course I want a woman on my arm, but my pride in having her there would have..." Oh, this is something that Griff says to Catherine. "Of course I want a woman on my arm, but my pride in having her there would have nothing to do with the shade of her hair or her eyes, or the delicate cut of her cheekbones, or the long sweep of her neck. It would be because of her intelligence, her compassion, her boldness. I would certainly never place her upon a shelf to gather dust as though she were not but a doll to be appreciated for her appearance, rather than her mind. I would want her to share her opinion on matters, to discuss things that are important to me, to her, to argue with me, and on the rare occasion when I am wrong, to convince me that she is correct. I would want her beside me because I value her judgment, because she wasn't afraid to be honest with me, and because she made me smile, made me laugh, made me glad to wake up with her in my arms."
You know what? I do remember that one, and that is a really great line. That is really, really great, because he's, you know, he's giving her a not so veiled compliment. He's saying, here mm-hmm. are all the things that I admire about you, but and you know, beauty is part of it, but it's so much more.
Yeah.
And obviously she's like, does he see that in me? And then you as the reader are like, oh,
yeah, Catherine, who do you think she's talking about?
Yeah, Catherine, why did you have to make this sweet moment so much more difficult? but speaking of, my favorite line comes from her, and it is the turning down of the marriage to Kingsland.
Mm-hmm. That's
and she,
a good
it's
one.
Just a short one, but she says, someday, Your Grace, I hope you will find a woman for whom you will willingly drop to your knees without hesitation. But as she is not me, my answer to your lovely proposal is no. I will not. I cannot marry you. And I just was like, yeah, yeah, finally. Oh my God, here mm-hmm, we go. Mm-hmm. Something. That is an excellent. Yeah, excellent.
You need to read rejection. Kingsland's. You have to read Kingsland's book, Zoe.
I do.
I think you're going to like it. I think you're really going to like it.
I must. And I know I'm going – I mean, I normally like Lorraine Heath's writing. It just – I think there were just too many little things that just frustrated me maybe about the interactions and the dialogue. And so therefore, like, the words didn't even pull me in.
Yeah, that's fair.
So our steaminess rating and encounter counter.
Two encounters.
Strip poker and cottage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't find it steamy at all because I just wasn't into them even a little bit. But what would, mm-hmm. as a person who was enjoying the book, what would you rate the steam level?
I would still just, I mean, it wasn't like crazy hot and heavy. And I'm lying saying this because I'm reading some other books that I've been finding very, very steamy. But so I would give it like, it's a cup of tea. Like, it's a good cup of tea. But it's not,
yeah.
It's neither hot nor cold. It is just a cup of tea.
Perfect. All right. So our feminist recap. Now, I get it. Griff, like, wants to have this club where people can come and explore no matter class or – he doesn't say race, but, you know, one would hope. But that's mm-hmm. specifically not mentioned. But no matter class or gender – he said all those lovely words about the kind of wife that he wants. You know, it's obvious that Griff is, you know, a historical feminist. However, there was something specific about this book that it just didn't come off to me, like, as particularly feminist. Like, I felt like Catherine herself, like, is not, like, the feminist heroine that I want to read.
Agreed.
Because she just, again, like, doesn't – and she didn't try at all to real – well, she apparently – she tried for one line to see Althea after her parents said she couldn't, and they kind of fell out of touch. And I was like, come on, girl. Why aren't you, like, helping your girlfriend? But I know that wasn't the focus of this book, but I don't know. I feel like this book is neutral. I think that Lorraine Heath is writing feminist books, but I wouldn't recommend this book as an empowering feminist work.
I can concur with all that. I think that it was neither super supportive nor offensive. I think it had some moments, some brilliant, like, it had some, like, little snippets of it potentially. But again, I think Catherine was more a status quo kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like, she wasn't, you know, being our super ultra feminist hero that we love so much.
And I also have
again
to-
like and if she but if she was like I will say this like if she was again why I think it's neutral it's like I think Griff would have totally supported her and all her feminist endeavors, but he just, like, you know, because that's who he was. But again, like I said, neutral, because he didn't have to.
Okay, so this is gonna wrap into my writing feelings and also, like, the feminism, but basically the letter that he, you know, gets that he wrote to Kingsland, Catherine gets as, like, a present. And I thought the letter was terrible, and I couldn't believe that he wrote those things. I was just like, gross, ick, I'm not into it. So here's what he had to say about the most amazing woman that he just thought that it should read. This was his argument. Her thoughts are not muddled, but are concise, and she can offer a viewpoint you might not have otherwise considered. I have never known her to be capricious or irritatingly insipid. Like the finest of wines, he says later. She is bold, full-bodied, and tantalizing. Never disappointing. I'm so sorry, but could that be any more cliche? And it's just like, ugh. Like, it just – okay, and I shouldn't – I don't know. I feel like I'm being silly. That was my reaction to it. And I just, you know, I probably shouldn't say ick to something that probably many people, it works for many people, but it did not work for me. And yeah, it was a little disappointing. Regardless of that, I still think it's fascinating that I'm so excited to like keep reading the series. Like, what is it about these books and these authors? And even when I have a, you know, meh experience, that I'm just like, I'm so in that world and I want to keep
going.
It's
all about the side characters, Zoe. When you're in a book, because if you don't necessarily like identify with the main characters of one book in a series, you might see a little bit of something in one of the side characters. And then when you find out they get a book, you're like, oh yeah, I got to read that book. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps us going, Zoe. And that's why we keep reading. And that's why I like series where it's like one complete series, but then it's like, then you get a little tangent into another series and they like reference other people in the world that the author built. I think that's my favorite. And then I'm always like, oh God, what happened in their book? Or usually what I want is I want more interaction between the characters in different series and I want them to overlap more. And they're usually like just a little tangential. But I love when there's like people overlap.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I think we should have our final book rating.
Okay. I think this is a book for me. I'd still give it an 8.
Wow. You really like this book.
Yeah. I mean, like, I enjoyed reading it. I had a good time reading it. It made me want to read the second one. Like, I didn't have, like, there were things that were annoying about it. But I will say, like, again, getting to Marcus's book where I put it down within, like, a chapter. I was like, nah.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Well,
it's more, there's Marcus's book. I just remember, I think it was one of those things where I just didn't – you don't know Marcus as well, so I wasn't as, like, into his character. And then we have a completely separate new character who becomes, like, who he's, you know, talking – like, who becomes his love interest. Yeah. And I just, like, wasn't – I know that there's a thing there that saves it for me in the end because I have read it. But I just, like – it wasn't, like – like, I felt like this book kind of got me into it pretty quickly. Kingsland book really, like – immediate, just devour that one. And then this one, I was like, I know there's a save here, but I just don't want to find it. I'll go read something that I can get into in, you know, in a page.
Well, I have many of those. I'm going to rate this book a 5. I would take it or leave it. A part of me wanted to rate it lower, but then I thought about it and I was like, no, if I hadn't read this book for the podcast, I would have finished it. I would have kept going. But even though it wasn't my favorite thing, and also I still want to keep reading in the series. So while this one didn't work for me, I want to know more.
As you should.
Yes. Well, thank you again to our patron, Sindhu, for your suggestion of this book, because this gave us a great discussion. I think having the patrons choose books for us so far, we've really had, I think, even more interesting discussions, because when we're not picking the books that we are absolutely drawn to, it's just leading to more that we can talk about and more differences of opinion. And I really am enjoying that.
I am too. And I love that in some cases, it's like, you know, we're both like, oh, we love Lorraine Heath. So it's interesting how that got more of a discussion out of us, because like, we love this author and we already know this author. So, but it's a lot of fun also too, because there's so many good authors to cover. And who knows when Zoe and I would have actually gone to a Lorraine Heath after the one we did
100 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Over 100 episodes ago. Oh my gosh, that's wild.
Yes.
Yes. So thanks again, Sindhu. And if you want to become a patron like Sindhu and you have a book you want to suggest, you can join us on Patreon. And there's always a link to that in the show notes. So, Kelsey, what are we reading next time?
We are reading The Duke of Midnight by Elizabeth Hoyt. We are going back to Maiden Lane.
Finally.
Finally. We started the series. We got a good chunk of the way through and then we abandoned it. There's just too much going on.
Yeah, it's a long series. We knew it was going to be a big commitment, but we're having fun working our way through slowly. And in the meantime, you are going to hear from us again because we are doing our little on dies episodes in between our main episodes. So there will be another one of those coming out in between this episode and Duke of Midnight. So be excited for that to hit your podcast feeds.
Yes, we're excited for these little short snippets that we're sending you guys, and it's been fun kind of coming up with things to talk about. For me, I have some book recommendations that are not historical romance, but books that I really liked for whatever weird reason I liked them. Some of them were like random ones I just read for I don't know what reason, or I just found them on Bookstagram and was like, all right, let's try it, and actually found some ones I really liked, and I will tell you about them in one of those episodes.
Nice. Well, thank you again, listeners, for joining us today. And join us next time as we read Duke of Midnight by Elizabeth Hoyt.
And may all your ever afters end happily.